Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening. I'm Gwen Berry. I'm in South Florida, and this is the Sunday Show. We are sponsored by Roundtree7.com, and that's the number 7 blog, and the Commons Project Network. And today with me are my usual guys, co-hosts Jack Jodell in Minneapolis and Wayne Johnson, who's in Ohio today. And our guest is Mike Stagg. He's in New Orleans, and he's going to talk to us about what's going on in New Orleans as far as the cleanup and the and Mike, do you have anything to tell us about the flooding, too?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on.
You're most welcome. Thanks for coming on and getting this information out.
Well, as everybody probably recalls, you know, 9 years ago, after Hurricane Katrina, which by the time it got around the New Orleans area was a Category 1 storm, the levees failed, and over 1,800 people died, and there was a massive rebuilding effort on the for levees in particular, to protect the city so that this kind of stuff wouldn't happen again, but. There was also an effort to basically take politics out of the flood control effort by creating these super authorities for levee boards. And they were charged exclusively with providing for flood protection on the east side of the Mississippi River and on the west side of the Mississippi River. And as part of that, they had set up basically a blue ribbon approach to naming people to serve on these levee boards, and you had people from National Resources Defense Council, other people like that who ended up being on this levee board. They had to have technical expertise. They had to have particular insight into levee technology, floods, and one of the people who got appointed was John Barry, the author of Rising Tide, the story of the 1927 Great Mississippi River Flood.
Wow.
And so in the course of their just looking at what had happened, I mean, obviously, you know, I think the Times-Picayune won a Pulitzer Prize for their reports on, the dynamics that led to the levee failures here, which was, coastal wetlands loss in Louisiana.
Right.
We lose basically a football field of wetlands every hour in Louisiana.
Wow. Wow.
And we've lost the equivalent of the state of Delaware since the 1930s in wetlands here. And so in the course of these, the Southeast Louisiana Flood Protection Authority East, which is one of the two levee authorities, looked at this and said, we can't just rely on levees. We have to do something about coastal restoration. And so they actually filed a suit in 2013 and named 97 oil and gas companies and said that these companies had violated the terms of the permits they had been issued to operate in the coastal zone of Louisiana, which required them that once they did their operation, whether it was drilling a well, whether it was cutting a canal to get to a well location, or if they were just digging a trench to lay a pipeline, they had to restore the land as closely as practicable back to the condition they found it. And in reviewing something like 800 permits, they found out that none of these permits had the terms of those permits had been met.
Wow.
And so they brought suit against these 97 oil and gas companies, which set off a political firestorm because, Louisiana is essentially a petrocolonial state.
Right.
The longstanding story here was that, the Texaco flag actually flies over the state capitol. Well, Texaco's owned by Chevron now, so it's been replaced. But so immediately the governor demanded that the suit be canceled and then went about trying to replace the members of the levee authority. And it turns out that a couple of members of the levee authority, including John Barry, their terms had expired. So he removed them, essentially. And then the Louisiana Oil and Gas Association, the Louisiana Mid-Continent Oil and Gas Association, and the governor, Bobby Jindal, made killing this lawsuit the central focus of the legislative session that just ended on June 3rd. And, you know, so there was a, you know, General Russell Honoré, one of the, I guess, you know, the heroes of Katrina, the post-Katrina flooding era, formed this Green Army to try to bring together environmental groups across the state that were all kind of off on their own. And John Barry had, after he left the Levy Authority, had formed Restore Louisiana Now, a nonprofit, basically to make the case for why this, these lawsuits should be able to proceed. And, you know, the fact is that there is no dispute over the essential facts of the matter that oil and gas activity in the coastal wetlands of Louisiana have contributed to wetlands loss. You go back to the 1970s when Edwin Edwards was governor the first two terms, Louisiana passed this thing called the first use tax. And it was an attempt to tax energy produced and in Louisiana and produced outside Louisiana that was processed here. Mm-hmm. It was ultimately declared unconstitutional because they tried to get too cute with carving exemptions for Louisiana-produced energy. But the central tenet of it was that Louisiana's coastal wetlands bore an exorbitant price by our willingness to allow our energy resources to be exploited. Mm-hmm. And so... Wow. You know, this is well-established fact. It was state policy. It only became, once this lawsuit was filed that the energy industry rebelled, and the governor said that's not our policy. And so there was something like 18 bills filed during the session to attack the lawsuit in one way or the other. 17 of them were defeated. One of them, SB 469, was not. It was in a Senate committee. A Senate Judiciary Committee, and it was headed to failure, and they pulled that bill. The Senate President assigned it to another committee. The next day, they completely rewrote the bill, and it passed out of the Natural Resources Senate Natural Resources Committee the next day. In their haste, they have apparently not only exempted those 97 oil and gas companies from any liability. There were two parish lawsuits filed, one by Jefferson Parish, one by Plaquemines Parish. They tried to attack those, but as a Loyola University law professor, who is a former deputy administrator of the EPA, pointed out that under the way this law is written, it's so broadly written that now BP could challenge any damages to the parishes in Louisiana who were damaged by the 2010 Macondo explosion.
Oh, no.
And the governor was warned about this. Governor General was warned about this. Again, this Professor Verchik at Loyola University in New Orleans wrote a 2,700-word legal memorandum that was published like 2 days after the bill was passed. It was subsequently endorsed by more than 100 legal scholars across the country, including every law school in the state of Louisiana. And... the Attorney General urged Governor General to veto the bill. He signed it anyway. Mm-hmm. So as matters stand right now, with the passage of 469 and its signing, the fact that it was signed into law by Governor General, the oil and gas companies have been exempted from any damages, from being brought to court, sued over damages that they inflicted to the wetlands, and possibly BP... has been exempted from the damages they would have to pay the state, which are estimated to be about $12 billion. So as matters now stand, 469 has effectively killed any chance for coastal restoration in Louisiana through the political power of the Oil and Gas Association. There's no dispute of the facts that their work did the damage, but now they will not be held legally
accountable. They won't have any liabilities for it.
Right.
Exactly.
And Glenn, you'll also remember I had forwarded you, and I think Jack too, some information where a oil pipeline running through a nature reserve had sprung a leak, and all the workers and the oil company did was wrap it with trash bags and duct tape and left it like that for a year.
Yeah.
So this is kind of complementing how much the oil industry has influence in Louisiana. And this is the kind of stuff that you can also kind of expect from when they put in the Keystone Pipeline down through the country.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mike, I want to thank you for coming on today and for giving us that very, very detailed and very accurate and very well-researched report, because I'll tell you, it is clear indication that Bobby Jindal is just a puppet of the oil companies, and he has absolutely no interest in the people of Louisiana whatsoever. The only people he's interested in are the people who are running and or dealing in the oil business. That's all he cares about.
Well, there's another angle to this, too. It turns out that his brother works for the law firm in Washington, D.C. that is representing BP in both civil and criminal matters.
That figures.
And, there's your nepotism, right?
This guy ran for governor he ran once and lost in 2003. He ran and got elected in 2007 after Katrina. But, he ran on the ethical gold standard that he wanted to set up Louisiana, rid us of our corrupt past. Yet his brother is an attorney for BP, BP will now, their attorneys would now have, a fiduciary responsibility to pursue exempting the company from these damage claims in Louisiana based on this law.
Wow.
I'm sure his brother would get a nice bonus in his grave right now as we speak, not that he was any role model, but certainly, when it came to battling the petroleum companies, he was not timid, and he did your state a great service by lambasting those guys the way he did, and his work stood for many, many years. So I'm sure he's spinning in his grave, like I say, and along with it are a lot of people that have been damaged by this horrible oil spill in 2010 and ever since. People are still getting sick down there. It's ridiculous.
Oh, yeah. The chemical industry is bad. Speaking as a Republican, I can say there's one thing to be pro-business, but it's another thing to be pro-enabling predatory capitalistic. And
yes,
this is what you're looking at here.
Very good point.
There's people's health that if I was somebody living in Louisiana, for the health of myself and many of my kids and any future generations, I would not be in Louisiana at all.
Right. Say, Mike, if I could ask, is there any possibility that this law, this new 469 or whatever it is, will be challenged on the federal level?
Well, as it turns out, the lawsuit that was brought by the levy authority was initially filed in state court. It was kicked into federal court. And the levy authority was trying to get it remanded back to state court. So I'm not sure exactly where it'll stand right now. The attorneys who were retained by the levy authority to conduct the lawsuit are also named the individual levy boards that comprise the authority as plaintiffs. So, and those plaintiffs, ironically, were not mentioned in 469, so they may have left themselves open in just their haste to try to rid themselves of this liability. I'm sure there will be challenges. I think the next move it will be that once the law takes effect, which will be at the end of this month, the expected move is that the oil companies will then go to court and ask to have the case dismissed.
Mm-hmm.
And they will cite 469 as the basis for it, and then the legal maneuvering will begin in earnest.
In the high gear, yeah.
Right.
I'm wondering, too, this is really a mess, and it's typical. I wonder how heavy an influence the invisible hand of the Koch brothers are behind the scenes here. Those guys, they seem to have their fingers in all the wrong places all the time. And they do it very sneakily and very quietly, And they funnel billions of dollars into bad causes. And I can't help but think they must be involved here somewhere.
Oh, they are. They are very active in Louisiana.
I bet they are.
If you go back to, again, the post-Katrina era, when there were people getting sick and what they call Katrina trailers in New Orleans area, temporary trailers that people were living in.
Well,
that was formaldehyde, right? And who was fighting EPA's efforts to classify formaldehyde as a carcinogen? But our own Senator David Vitter.
He's corrupt as they come.
The largest consumer and producer of formaldehyde in the country is Georgia Pacific, which is owned by the Koch brothers.
Absolutely.
Oh yeah, there you go.
And
that's right.
And Senator Vitter is going to be a candidate for governor here next year. So you also
have to consider Halliburton. I'd also Halliburton's got to be in this because, if I remember correctly, a lot of the lawsuits of the oil spills fell onto the mishandling and misuse and shortcomings that Halliburton did on the drilling of that well.
Right, bad cement, right.
It was, you know, right.
The irony of this thing was that the industry tried to say, well, that, BP was the rogue operator, except when you consider that Transocean owned the rig. They were the largest, you know, they have more, the largest owner of drill offshore drilling rigs in the world.
Right.
Halliburton did the cement. Halliburton is the industry when it comes to cement. And those were the blowout preventers that failed were Cameron blowout preventers. They are the standard. They are the industry. So, yeah, BP's reputation precedes it and follows it. But that was the industry. That was industry standards in place up and down the line in that accident.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't. You can call it an accident.
No, I don't call it an accident.
No, I don't either.
I call it malpractice, but that's me. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good point. I'd call it that too.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it. So, Mike, what is the grassroots on this in the state of Louisiana?
Well, you know, the interesting thing has happened. Even after 469 was passed, there's been a surge of interest and public outrage over first the passage of the bill and now the governor signing it. And I've worked with the Green Army over the past few months during the session, and we are doing two things. A week from yesterday, on June 21st, a group of us are going to start in Grand Isle, Louisiana, which Grand Isle was recently cited as a place where in North America, where you have the impact of climate change is most readily apparent. You have sinking land and rising oceans. We're going to take water from the Gulf of Mexico out at Grand Isle, and we're going to walk from Grand Isle to Baton Rouge. We're going to carry that water. It's about 151 miles. We're going to carry that water to the governor's mansion, and then we're asking activists across the state to bring their troubled waters and meet us in Baton Rouge and tell the story of their troubled waters, and
good.
We will then ceremonially dump that water on the lawn of the governor's mansion.
Very
he's
good.
Dumping,
all right. Well, that's
he's
good.
Been, he's been dumping on us. We're going to go dump on him.
I like that. I like that. Yeah, that's great. Are people, you know, you folks down there have been battling these oil companies for many, many, many years on a wide variety of issues. Most of all pollution-based, you know. But are people starting to get a little weary of the fight, or is there renewed interest now, or what is the status of the average citizen down there in the area?
Well, I think we are seeing a fundamental shift taking place. You know, we almost beat LOGA, Louisiana Oil and Gas Association. We almost beat them in the session. And this comes from a standing start. There was no environmental money in the election cycle 3 years ago. We have elections next year. We will be organized. We have voting records to go after these people on now.
Good.
But if you look, next year will be the 10th anniversary of Katrina. And if you look at what's happened in Louisiana over the last 10 years, Katrina and the post-Katrina floods.
Oh, God.
Three weeks after Katrina struck, Rita struck southwest Louisiana.
Right.
In 2008, right. Gustav and Ike.
Yeah.
In 2012, Isaac. These were all relatively minor storms by historic standards, yet they really wrecked our state.
Well, yeah.
And you put the middle of that in 2010, the BP Gulf Gusher.
Oh.
And we have, this is like the cumulative effect. People are getting this, that,
right.
They know something is up, and in some ways it's generational. Younger people get it a lot better than older people, but there is a growing recognition that these impacts are linked. Our elected officials are massive climate change deniers. I mean, whether it's David Vitter or Senator Mary Landrieu, Democrats and Republicans.
They're all bought out. That's why.
It's the oil party. And but people get this now, and you know, they understand that climate change is real and that it is driven by the burning of fossil fuels. It is driven by our dependence and on these energy sources. Right, and you know, an interesting thing that's happened just in the last 2.5 months is that there was a proposal to do fracking in St. Tammany Parish. St. Tammany Parish is a prosperous parish on the north shore of Lake Pontchartrain. There hasn't been a well, there hasn't been an oil and gas well drilled in St. Tammany Parish in over 25 years. Well, all of a sudden, there is a massive anti-fracking movement in St. Tammany Parish, which is a heavily Republican parish. And a lot of it's, you know, not in my backyard, but it is very real. St. Tammany has the highest we have parishes in Louisiana, not counties. We have the St. Tammany has the highest percentage of college graduates per per capita of any parish in the state, and they're in open rebellion against the oil and gas industry.
Well, that's really good news.
Yeah. So I change is coming, and it's building, and I think one of the things that the people who took part in the legislative fight have talked about is that we lost, but we are not disheartened. In fact, we have a lot of reason to be encouraged and optimistic, and our commitment now is to use the next 18 months, which is 9 months to the next session, 3 months in that session, then 6 months after that to statewide elections, to make environmental issues, climate change, fracking, put all those things.
Major issue.
Issues in these campaigns. Hold these legislators responsible for the votes they've taken.
Good. I hope you're successful in that endeavor. I wanted to ask you, too, while I think of it, Bobby Jindal, good old bought-out Bobby Jindal. What do you think his future is? What is he aiming for down there? He can't really believe that he's going to try and get the GOP nomination for president. Good God.
No, he'll never be president. President, you know. Maybe
Where's he going to go from here? Is he going to try to get into the Senate?
Well, you know, I would say that that would be a possibility, but I think he doesn't want to be one of 100. You know, he doesn't want...
No, he wants to be the kingpin.
Right, and that won't happen. So, I don't know. He and Senator Vitter don't get along.
That's good.
They're in the same party, but they have no affection for each other. And I don't see him being able to get elected to any other office in Louisiana anytime in the near future.
That's what I wanted to hear.
he'll be brought into for lobbying and stuff like that. He'll get his paycheck.
Yeah. He'll
end up in D.C. as a lobbyist.
He's already formed a nonprofit up there called America First.
Nonprofit my butt, but yeah.
What a liar.
So, he's
Jindal
positioned
First
himself.
Is what he's really meaning.
Absolutely. But he's got no future here. So he seems intent on wrecking the place to the extent possible and then moving on.
Exactly what he'll do.
Mike, what you're actually saying here, which I think is some of the best news I've heard in a long time, is, and it's taken the Southeast and Louisiana on a spotlight here, being annexed or sacrificed to the gods of corporation in this country. It's finally coming back around, and locally, people are putting their heads up and they are saying enough. And you're seeing the presence of it with people actively working against fracking and becoming aware of this and putting their heads up about this and taking the politics back into the hands of folks who are going to say, no, we're not going to allow it to happen. Is that what I'm hearing?
And I think that's what's happening. You know, I think it's one thing when these are all sort of abstract issues. But what's, these floods and these storms have, people lose their houses. They come back, they rebuild, only to have to do it again.
And their kids are getting sick and dying, It's hitting home, and people are going to react accordingly. And that, I'm sorry that it's had to be that way, but I'm glad that people are finally starting to wake up and starting to raise hell.
Well, Tip O'Neill was right.
I was going to say, in Dorchester County, where I'm from in Maryland. Yeah, you know, we have very low lands and stuff. We're very much like Louisiana, too, which is, you know, I'm on the Delmarva Peninsula, which contains the state of Delaware. So when you were saying you were losing wetlands equal to the whole state of Delaware, that was, you know, very relevant, and I, you know, I can picture that for myself. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. But what we also have around home is, and of course cross-country too, but a term we learned of several years ago was environmental racism. In other words, it's not really so much the racism other than it's they tend to be the poor demographics of the area where your parish that had all the college graduates are fighting. Poor people have been fighting down there in Louisiana for a long time, but they are poor. Henceforth, the environmental rules and regulations aren't going to apply. There's not going to be a person. They don't care if they get sick because they're disposable.
Well, absolutely. And we see that, you know, another aspect of that, the way that plays out in Louisiana, is Governor Jindal has refused to take part in Medicaid expansion. And last year, in 2013, the bureaucrats in the Department of Health and Hospitals were requested to put together an assessment of the impact of Medicaid expansion in Louisiana. They pointed out that it would be a financial winner that, even if it was moderately successful, would provide health care coverage to 577,000 Louisiana citizens. And the governor has refused to take that. And the legislature has refused to override his refusal, and that's because poor people do not contribute to campaigns.
Yeah.
There you go.
Well, they don't make him vulnerable. See, he can overlook them easily. And that guy ought to be strung up, really. Excuse my vernacular there, but I tell you, that he's despicable.
He is. And, you know, I think people got that on a sort of a basic level, but one of the things that's really happened here in the last week or 10 days with the signing of 469 is that it's just so clear the contempt he holds for the people of this state.
Yeah.
White,
yeah.
Black, rich, poor, South, you know.
Yeah.
There's a guy down here by the name of Foster Campbell who's on the Public Service Commission, says Jindal's had Louisiana in his rearview mirror since he got reelected in 2011. It's clear.
Right. Right.
It's very clear.
Now tell me, he was born overseas. I don't have any problem with that, but how long has he been
born
a resident of Louisiana?
He was actually born in Baton Rouge.
Oh, he was.
His parents came from India, right?
Oh, that's what.
But he was born in Baton Rouge. Born and
he
raised
was,
in
I
Baton
see.
Rouge.
Right. Oh, I see. Okay, all right. Yeah. I was thinking, boy, that's an awful uppity way, if you will, for a fellow that may have been born overseas to come in and basically take over a state, and you know, but that's not the case. So,
well, you know, the interesting thing is he chose the name. His legal name is still Paiush.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Jindal. Bobby is a name he chose for himself based on one of the characters in the Brady Bunch. Bobby
oh,
is
that just makes it complete.
Name.
That's just complete.
Right? Bobby is not his legal name.
Well, at least he didn't choose Marcia.
Any of that against the guy, and frankly, y'all know me. I'm more goddess directed and earth mother grounded.
Right.
But I got to tell you, none of that bothers me. What bothers me is what Mike just said—the contempt that he is.
Oh,
holding.
Exactly.
And it's greed.
It's greed. It's greed. Right.
It's self-centeredness to the max.
And, Mike, what I'm hearing from you is that people, even people who have large pockets, are beginning to understand that they've sold out something more that they never actually understood or comprehended, that being a part of that side of the street, if you will, actually they didn't buy into all that's come down, and now they're everybody is seeing what's going on. Am I catching that right?
Yes, you are. And I just want to point out, St. Tammany, this parish, you know, the parish on the north shore of Lake Pontchartrain, consistently voted. Jindal was a congressman from the district that St. Tammany is part of. Steve Scalise, the current congressman from that district. David Vitter before Jindal. But, you know, that parish was slammed by Katrina. There were no levees to fail. There weren't as many deaths, but flooding is a part of their life there from storm surge. And they come to the same realization about the connection between, climate change and the things that happen to them in their lives, in their homes, and having to rebuild and time and again. The city of Mandeville, which is one of the wealthiest communities in St. Tammany, is looking at spending anywhere from $3 to $30 million to try to deal with storm surge on their lakefront. Again, it's a series of minor storms by historic standards that have created this, both the awareness and the need to respond to the problem. And now you throw in the fracking stuff, so it's a volatile situation there.
Are people responding in kind, too, now to the greater amount of need to the state of Louisiana from the oil industry, particularly the Gulf oil spill, and the ongoing calamity that, it's decimated industry too, especially the independent businessmen in fishing and oyster and all kinds of industries down there, including restaurateurs.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's an interesting situation. The Department of Wildlife and Fisheries has still banned consumption of fish from certain areas of coastal Louisiana.
Oh, hell yeah.
As a result of contamination from the 2010 BP Gulf Gusher. And so what you have now is BP is fighting the Department of Wildlife and Fisheries to say this is wrong, and I would not be surprised if the Louisiana Seafood Marketing Board sides with BP on this. Because, it's part of the happy talk. And,
well, let them supply all the future banquet fish to the BP's banquets.
Right.
There you go.
Make them force feed them to eat. Have them eat it.
Yeah, but, historically, the down in Morgan City, Louisiana, there's been this festival for 40 or 50 years called the Fish and Petroleum Festival.
Yeah.
It was sort of like encapsulated the myth that the oil and gas industry was not only benevolent but probably benign. These two industries could exist happily, and part of the impact of the Gulf Gusher in 2010 was that myth is shredded. And I think with them trying to exempt the industry now from contributing to coastal restoration, I think the myth is further shredded. And I think that's the reason that we have hope that we can actually begin to end our petrocolonial status.
Well, I think you're on the forefront of something that could prove to be very, very monumental, and I wish you every success in the world. We have been engulfed by corporatism in this country, and it has not been good for the average citizen. It's been bad, and it's been bad for our health. It's been bad for our neighborhoods. It's been bad for our environment. It's been bad for the planet. And, it's time we put a screeching halt to all this corporate profit-driven nonsense that's short-term gain and long-term loss. We've got to reverse that. We've got to get back to common sense. We've got to get back to regulation that is effective and that works. And we've got to, improve the planet accordingly. And that's the only hope that we have to really emerge from this. And we're heading in the right direction on it.
Mike?
And, Jack, I would contradict the short-term gain, because if you factor in the environmental costs, the health costs, kids coming down with the asthma and the breathing problems from the petrochemical industry down there, it is still a huge loss to this country and the everyday working middle class.
Well, it's a short-term gain for the oil companies. They don't give a damn about any of that stuff.
Right. It's all, but they say, but they bring jobs and they have the,
jobs.
If you look
at
the big picture of what it really is costing.
Right.
If you want to do a true accounting of what it's costing per the gain, because the oil industry is not being held to be liable for anything.
Right.
All the cost is to the citizens of Louisiana, the everyday working people.
Exactly.
you've devastated a huge loss in that whole geographic area of the country.
Yeah, it's not an investment gain. It's an investment loss. Any way you look at it, it's a loss.
Right.
Except in the hands of a few people that benefit from it profit-wise, only profit-wise, and in no other way.
Right.
Well, I'd like to make
two small points
here. One is that Louisiana has anytime you do fracking, you do horizontal drilling as part of that process. Louisiana for 20 years has had a severance tax exemption on horizontal drilling. So the myth that the oil and gas industry is so benevolent to Louisiana is based on the fact of the revenue that they gave us. But we're not getting revenue off all this fracking that they're doing now.
No,
and so
But
the other point I want to make is going to this whole issue of fairness. You know, Louisiana has one of the highest disparities of income equality in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
Jindal has worsened this. Louisiana gives away more than $5 billion a year in tax exemptions.
Mm-hmm.
And so all through Jindal's tenure, he's claimed, oh, tough times, we don't have money. Well, no, if you're giving away $5 billion, but you're decimating programs with cuts of $10 to $100 million, that's not tough times. That's bad.
It's bad management. Bad administration.
Bad business management. Exactly right,
so
Jack.
He's not a conservative. He's not a conservative.
No, he's not.
No.
Let me ask you, Mike, are there any candidates that are in sympathy, well, that are supportive of all of what you are talking about with turning the state around and addressing all of these environmental issues and bring Louisiana back into an environmental health, if you would? Are there any candidates, seriously, that are down there that aren't in bed with the lobbyists and the petro industry, the petrochemical industry? Are there any coming out now that have the kind of financing, if it were, I think it's still, and I don't know, you look at what just happened to Eric Cantor, and you got to think about it and say, oh my goodness, is it possible that,
yeah, I had that same thought,
the free side of the lobbying, quote, conservative party of Republicans and the Democrats too.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a turnaround going on, and is it happening there in Louisiana? Is there any candidates that are stepping up now?
Well, our elections are 18 months off. David Vitter is probably announcing his candidacy officially tomorrow at the Baton Rouge Press Club. But I think that is where the opportunity is. Whether anybody is going to be smart enough or shrewd enough or astute enough to grab that opportunity remains to be seen.
Yeah.
But, we have open primaries down here, and it'll be an open seat for governor, and there'll probably be, 18 to 20 candidates.
Uh-huh.
And if everybody's running at the same part of the track, try to be the middle-of-the-road candidate, don't rock the boat. It leaves the room is to the outside. And I think that's where, that's where the real opportunity is in Louisiana politics. In presidential elections, we have 20% higher turnout than we do in our races for governor. And, the governor has a lot more impact on your life than the president does.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
And
I think
what it is that in national campaigns, whether the candidates believe it or not, they definitely speak in elevated tones to higher themes that our state politics doesn't address. It doesn't include that kind of messaging. And so I think that's where the opportunity is going to be in 2015 for, some candidates for governor and candidates for the legislature to really take on the ground that nobody else wants to claim, which is we have to end our petrocolonial status here. What's good for the oil industry is not necessarily good for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And that we've made too many trade-offs over the years, and now the bill is coming due. And what are we going to do about it? How are we going to pay?
Mm-hmm.
We're just letting the deepest pockets at the table walk away.
You're talking about
the moral
ground.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the value, and that's where the opportunity lies.
Right. And I'm sure Vitter views himself as a shoo-in. At least he's thinking he's going to be. And, you know, he'll just be the same old bullshit all over again, again and again and again, same old crap, bought-out crap, and he won't do a damn thing for Louisiana.
I'll tell you right now that David Vitter will not be the next governor of Louisiana. I'll guarantee
it. I hope you're right.
The reason I say this, the polls that have been taken, here's a guy with 100% name recognition, and in these polls he gets 25 to 30% of the votes. Everybody knows him. That's not an electoral victory right there.
That's great. That's
everybody knows him and nobody likes him.
Good. Well, he's a crook. He's a liar.
Well, he's a whoremonger. That's one word for him.
That's another thing, right? Yeah, very true.
You know, D.C. Madam, he was making calls from the floor of the House of Representatives on a government-issued BlackBerry to the D.C. Madam.
Oh, sure.
All right.
Absolutely.
That's my taxpayer's dollars at work.
he's when they have the word hypocrite in the dictionary, his picture's right alongside of that word.
Wow.
Or a family values Republican, however you want to call
it. Yeah. Well, anything but.
I was going to say. That ship has sailed so often in that case.
Is there any chance that any of the outside of the two main, you know, contenders on the floor, Green Party or anything like that, has any opportunities here in this upcoming election?
Well, you know, again, we have open primaries. I think it's a matter of who can get their message heard.
Yeah.
Vitter will have a lot of money, but, you know, he's trying to sell an unsellable product.
Right.
And
right.
I think there will be other candidates in the race. Again, I still think that, you know, it's not going to be the people who are going to preach the same old, that people will respond to somebody who addresses what's happening to our state in moral terms and who also wages a campaign based on, you know, making Louisiana safe for Louisianans.
Yes,
well,
what's good for the constituents.
Mike, let me ask you a question. When I think about elections now, just strategically, I think about the overpowering, the power that media brings to an election, even on the local side. And from my perspective, from my point of view, and from what I understand of media, it's corporate messaging, first, last, and always. And so money buys you time but doesn't guarantee you a seat at that table. In Louisiana, how do you see that working? I mean, I'm not real familiar with how fair and honest the Picayune can be, but I know I go to it to find out what's going on down there a lot of times. And of course you've got national channels that are all owned by a lot of petrochemical companies.
Well.
I'm just asking, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me put it to you this way: if mainstream media mattered, we'd have defeated 469. Every newspaper in the state, television stations were all editorializing against this bill, and also once it passed, editorializing to get the governor to veto it. It had no impact at all. And I think, I've been involved in some other activities in Louisiana, political activities in Louisiana on issues like Medicaid expansion. If infomercial time is dirt cheap, you can buy 30 minutes of broadcast time cheaper than you can buy 30 seconds. And I think where the opportunity is here is to do some public education over the next 18 months on issues.
Yes.
In depth to explain to people what's at stake and how these choices are real and how they can affect them.
Wow, that's
I love that idea.
Yeah.
I hope I hear a lot of that. And Mike, I'm going to ask you early here before we're off the air today. I encourage you to come on our show again and give us updates from time to time. And we always love to hear from Cherie as well, because you guys are on the right side of things, the correct side of things, the pro-people and pro-worker side of things. And you know what? That's the side to be on. And we love hearing from you. And we hope you're very successful in your endeavor, because it's the just cause. There's no doubt about that.
Very well stated, Jack. You're here.
Love to come back on.
You're welcome at any time, my friend, any time.
All right.
Mike, I want to ask you one other thing about what's going on down there. I'm the inquisitive one here. I would really like to know what your feel is for it down there as far as, I mean, there has been a lot of demonstration. A lot of people have, put their signs in the air and every more Katrina, yes, but, I mean, since the BP spill and everything, what is the general feel of the general population or community feel for the activists and the people who are doing all of that?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's one of the aspects of the change we've seen over the last decade, going back to, again, to starting with Katrina.
Katrina, yeah.
I think that Governor Jindal polls in the high 20s here in popularity right now.
Yeah.
I think there's a general distrust of authority, political power, and I think also the other thing we see is that there's a growing sophistication that people have in terms of being aware that they're being manipulated. Mm-hmm. And I think that they distrust, they tune out, the 30-second spots, the slick stuff. I think the real challenge, though, is to get them back involved in the political process.
Yeah.
Voter turnout is abysmal, and I think that's because people have lost faith in the people they elect to office.
The Koch brothers like it. They like abysmal turnouts because they like people being pissed off because for every irritated person, that's one less voter in their mind, and that's very true. And, you know, people have got to take that irritation and not get apathetic about it. They've got to get more determined to do more about it, and let's hope that happens.
Right. So, I think, we're talking about the next 18-month cycle. Yeah. I mean, that's where, in terms of impacting the state elections. And I think that's the challenge. Create awareness, create paths for action, and help create a sort of a platform, a venue for people who are not part of the sellout to get their voices heard.
Yes,
and
bravo.
Do you think state enthusiasm for local elections and the knowledge of that importance is something that can be accomplished in the next 18 months? I mean, I think it can. Simply because its time has come. There's such a thing as what goes around comes around. And yes. I do think that the timing is coming up for things to start to change.
I think people are looking for and listening for authentic voices. And I think they know slick when they hear it. They know fake when they hear it. They will know authentic when they hear it as well. So that, to me, is where both the challenge and the opportunity to find those authentic voices and to get them heard, because people will respond to them.
Now, for people who are listening from, the parishes in Louisiana, is there anything that you would put out there? I mean, are there any groups or any places to go that you would like people to know about so that they can get good information about what's going on, especially with local elections coming up and getting to know more information about how you can put the right people in office to get things moving?
Well, first of all, I would say yes. And two of the places to look would be GoGreenArmy.com, which is the website for the Green Army. That is getting more active, and we're going to have the Green Army will be holding some strategic planning meetings over the next few weeks, pointing towards sort of a course of action over the next 18 months. Restore Louisiana Now, which is the organization that John Barry started, is still active, very active on Facebook. The place that we're using to organize this march and this trouble, flood in Baton Rouge activity, the oil is gone, but we are here.
Yeah.
Facebook page is out there, and there's a lot of good information there as well. And I think that once it's a matter of tying all these little separate threads together. into a bigger rope that we can pull the state in the right direction.
And I want to ask you just personally, because we fit right into the category of alternative media and social media. We have our pages and stuff. I would ask you, how important is social media to doing the new kind of community activism and organizing?
Well, it's important, but I think part of the problem, the challenge we have in Louisiana is that the digital divide is very real here.
Yeah.
And what we found in the recently completed session is that clicking a like is an easy lift, too easy a lift to actually translate into real action. It needs to be a combination of social media translated into real life activity.
Right.
Calling legislators, getting involved, making typing out an email, not just clicking a like or signing an online petition.
Right.
That it still takes a combination of physical world and digital world, and that's part of the reason we continue to do public actions and marches like we're going to do with the march starting next Saturday at Grand Isle. It needs to be a mix of both worlds. It's not one or the other.
Yeah.
The environmental battles that I've been in, we handed out flyers and stuff, but it was really about what we call boots on the street, knocking on door to door, telling people, hand them a flyer, explain it to them, if they don't understand it or if they, are going to believe the counter propaganda against whatever your cause is, at least give them, get a chance to say, well, no, this isn't an accurate statement. Here is what's really going on. They haven't told you this part of it, And that's
right.
It's really about a grassroots effort, boots on the street, knocking door to door. That's really what needs to happen there.
Yep, I agree 100%.
All right, go ahead, Gwen.
Well, there, guys. I'm dialing Jack back in. He got dropped.
Okay. Well, Mike, I want to say while we're waiting to get Jack on here, kudos to you. I admire what you're doing there. It's definitely worth it. Needs to be done. Like I said, I can draw a lot of parallels to the Eastern Shore of Maryland or the Delmarva Peninsula where I'm from. There he is. Jack's back.
Yeah, hi.
Yeah.
What's up?
We lost you there, bud.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to take off early because of my father.
Oh, okay.
I'm just getting ready to head out the door.
Oh, well, good
Happy
night.
Father's Day, everybody.
Right, you, Jack.
Talk to you next week.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Well, anyway, Mike, what I was about to conclude is I know, the geographic area of what you're dealing with. We, too, are losing, I forget how many acres per year of our tidal wetlands and non-tidal wetlands because of actual sea rise, the erosion going on because of the heavier storms and more wave actions and stuff. When I was talking with somebody about global warming, they said, well, look, everybody, here's the proof. It only, gained 1 degree, for all the records. And I asked him if he ever understood what the butterfly effect was. Of course, he didn't know what the butterfly effect was. And I said, basically, it's a euphemism, like Schrodinger's cat. Butterfly flaps his wings in Mexico, and you have a tornado in Kansas. This 1 degree is an exponential factor. And, you only see 1 degree here. But what does it do when it finally compounds out and cascades out is that's when you're really getting real climate change and making some severe changes in our environment.
Well, you go next door to neighboring Texas. There are communities running out of water in Texas now.
Yeah.
Severe drought, multiple years of severe drought. California, droughts in California. Then next door here, we're getting floods the same time they're having droughts in Texas, And people like to cherry pick, the fact, we had a cold winter, so there can't be global warming. We had a cold winter, but you look at the
that was one of the things. That was one of the things brought up to me here in Columbus was we had more snow here this year than the previous, 3 years. And I said, yes, When the Earth gets warmer, there's more evaporation. When there's more evaporation, it's going to come down in some form. Now, if it's wintertime, it comes down in snow, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's like,
right.
You know, but they point to, they only take things halfway, and they stop
right.
at where it supports what their view wants to be instead of what is the true cause and effect.
Right, right.
So,
it's like earthquakes
yeah, so.
Related to fracking. You know.
Well, I think I've seen that too. So yeah.
Right, right. You know, there's a USGS study about Oklahoma recently. You know, during a football game this year, I think it was Oklahoma State and Oklahoma. A guy kicked the field goal during the middle of an earthquake in Oklahoma during the game, and it wasn't major. It was 3.8, something like that, earthquake. But it happened
yeah.
right before halftime in the game, and the guy was the ground was shaking when he kicked the field goal.
Well, we too here, you know. Of course, they're fracking the Marizona Shale. Of Western Pennsylvania and West Virginia and things, and it also runs into Western Maryland. But we had a pretty good earthquake here three years ago that actually cracked the Washington Monument in D.C.
Right.
It was
right.
the shifting, you know, when you crack, right, the tectonic plates and the geographical substrates, they shifted, and we felt the ripples all the way out to D.C. and the Eastern Shore of Maryland. So,
yep.
Yeah, there's some big changes going on that is man-made.
That's true.
Absolutely.
Gentlemen, we're at the top of the hour. I would invite you, of course, I invite you back, Mike. I hope you'll come back and keep us updated on this. Whatever we can do from this voice here, please don't hesitate to let me know.
Great. Thank you very much.
And
it was a pleasure, Mike.
Any information that you would like to, please give us the info on the walk into the state capitol. Would you give that to us once again before we go off here?
Absolutely. They're all is gone, but we are here is the main place we're doing the organizing right now. You know, we're inviting people to flood Baton Rouge on June 28th. Bring your troubled water, tell your story, and dump your water on the lawn of the governor's mansion.
Excellent. That's an excellent.
Very good.
Done. Wayne, thank you so much for being with me again.
As you know, Gwen, it's always my pleasure.
And Mike, it was a pleasure to have you on. I hope you'll be back soon to give us some better news too.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
You're most welcome. And I want to thank all of our listeners, both live and in the archives. And please remember that we are sponsored by the blog Roundtree 7, that's the number 7.com, and the Commons Project Network. You can find everybody from the radicals to the conservatives, but always with an honest message to put out there. Our friends like Dennis Traynor Jr. And the funny stuff Lee Camp is doing right now. I want to give Lee a plug here because he's got a new show on Russian TV or RT television called Lee Camp Redacted. Redacted tonight, I believe it is. And it's a really wonderful show. Gets the truth out there with a sense of humor that's really biting. Anyways, thank you for listening. This has been The Sunday Show with Jack Jodell, Wayne Johnson, and Gwen Berry. Tonight our guest was Mike. Mike, give me your last name there, darling.
Stag, S-T-A-G-G.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Well, thank you again, everybody. Good night.
All right.
That's our
good night
for this evening. Thank you for listening.